Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pagel. Our guest this week is Ted McKinney, who joins us to discuss the latest on appropriations and farm bill issues. But first, here's this week's headlines. Former President Donald Trump won the Iowa caucus with a strong backing from rural voters. According to a CNN entrance poll of caucus goers, 41% were from rural areas. Trump beat the combined total of votes for Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley by more than a 2-to-1 margin in 4 of Iowa's 7 top corn-producing counties. The former president received 20 delegates, while DeSantis gained 9 and Haley gained 8. Presidential candidates for both parties now shift their focus to New Hampshire for Tuesday's primary. Leaders of the House and Senate tax writing committees have reached a bipartisan deal that would raise limits on Section 179 expensing provision. The deal would also restore a bonus depreciation provision to 100% until 2025, aligning it with the expiration of several other Tax Cut and Job Act provisions, including the Section 199A. Farmers use these provisions to lower the cost of equipment and machinery. The bill also expands the child tax credit, which was a big Democratic priority. The maximum refundable credit per child will rise to $1,800 this year and will eventually climb to $2,000 by 2025. And finally, congressional leaders have reached a bipartisan deal to keep the government funded until March and avoid a government shutdown. Because of the extension, work on the farm bill has slowed significantly. Ted McKinney is the CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. He says the delayed appropriations bills will only further push back a farm bill.
Well, anything that delays the farm bill and this floor time to get a farm bill going hurts the farm bill. And so while we absolutely must have the appropriations, I mean, nobody's going to dispute that. It's cheating ever so slowly, ever so steadily into the time that would be needed and is needed for the farm bill. You know, on the backside of that, you know, stranger things have happened, but the farm bill, if it's not started in March or so, you get into this crazy, silly season of the election and all things just go out the window in terms of logic. And so we're hoping the appropriations get done quickly and then we can get a farm bill. I think that's what we're reading and hearing legislators want to do if it's possible.
Well, and Congress will need to get started soon on fiscal year 25 appropriations bills. So do you think Congress will have another long drawn out fight over fiscal year 25 appropriations spending bills?
Many people think that when you just pass a continuing resolution, that everything just continues on. Well, not quite. The money may continue, it may be okay, but what's lost, and I know this from my time at USDA, is that you cannot plan inside government for any period of time that is not yet projected or planned for. So just as a farmer or a processor, whoever is participating in USDA programs loses certainty, you lose certainty in government because you cannot plan for your future. So there are costs. There are real costs to this.
So given all of the work that needs to be done on appropriations and the farm bill, how is NASDA going about pursuing its priorities, you know, given all of the things that are taking place currently?
Well, there's nothing like dealing with certainty than by answering with certainty. And so we're following our long projected, long planned process and timeline. Monday, we will be out with our primary priorities, not a lot different than the past, but some that we believe need to be focused upon. And we're just going to continue to put the shoulder to the old wheel and try to get this thing through. It will take others like us. It'll take breaks in the whole political scene. It'll have to take some people on both sides compromising. But I still hold out hope. Gosh, dog. I'm still an optimist. I'm more of a glass half full kind of guy. And if I weren't, it'd be a pretty depressing life. So I'll stick with that. But boy, the realities of the floor time to get farm bill through is what's really, I think, starting to eat into everybody's psyche. And that's a bit troublesome.
We'll be right back with more from Ted McKinney right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. The Iowa caucuses kicked off this week, and former President Donald Trump won with a landslide. NASDA CEO Ted McKinney says if Trump is reelected, agriculture policy could look different the next 4 years.
Mr. Trump, though there are some arguments about the tariffs that were imposed, steel and aluminum in particular, Mr. Trump was pretty good to agriculture when he made, I think, a necessary move by most people's account on the China activity. He kept us whole. Now, there's two sides to that. You can argue that more spending occurred and we're now getting deeper and deeper in debt. But as far as ag goes, he kept ag whole. I think depending on where he goes with tariffs, we're reading, and sometimes there's bravado and sometimes there's messaging that may not come to pass, but there is a lot of news about the intent to go after tariffs in a big way. And I don't think that would help agriculture. I really don't. We saw that with some lost market share last time, even though I think farmers were kept whole for the interim. But at the same time, he's got a good sense, a good gut sense on this kind of thing. And I think in some way, shape, or form, I think we'll get back into the trade business.
To kind of continue on with that, you know, looking at the current trade outlook for the U.S., where do you see the biggest challenges that need to be addressed this year?
Well, there's a couple long-term and there's a couple of short-term. The long-term is we have got to keep getting the World Trade Organization right. It provides the rules of the road that mostly people follow. There's times they stray and, you know, you have to straighten those things out. But if we don't have a WTO and rules of the road, my gosh, it just becomes who's got the most muscle, who can flex that muscle, who can do the best. It's just not the way to run the world trading scene. So that's one. I think we have to keep focused on a lot of countries where we have existing relationships. Those have got to be maintained as strong. And we've got to continue to diversify the portfolio. I'll just say that at some point, I think India has to recognize they've got to trade. They think they want to do it all on their own, but they are ripe for trade that will benefit them and us. So I keep recognizing and believing that India is one we've got to continue to work with. And I think the current administration is. I think we could push that harder. But I'm also a big fan of the new RAP program coming out of the Foreign Ag Service under Secretary Vilsack. We have needed an increase in that for years. It's finally coming, albeit through the CCC, a little different, but okay. And I think that's going to let us diversify our markets, which we very badly need. But we must remember, you can only get so far with trade promotion dollars. At some point, you've got to break down the tariff barriers, because that is oftentimes what keeps us from really, really expanding.
So wrapping up our conversation, I do want to touch on ag labor. You know, it continues to be a major concern for farmers, but what do you think it's going to take to get Congress to actually take up and pass ag labor reform?
I empathize and agree with the Republican side that we've got to fix the border. Oh my gosh, it's just hemorrhaging. Look at the TV every night and what's happening in the cities. And yet, we can't wait on that because farmers are losing income by not having fruit and produce picked or cows milked. So we're going to continue to work on this. And I think we came close in the omnibus in December of 2022. Didn't quite get it. But it's one of our highest priorities. In fact, at the conference I'm here at now, we will talk about that in 2 hours, that very, very topic. What we're trying to get is first making sure there's a live, valid H2A, H2B program. But in that, we have to have flexibility in that, because a seasonal program is not good enough for the dairy and some pork farmers that desperately need year-around work. So it needs a major overhaul, and it's just horribly unfortunate that the border has been such a sieve, because it's just added great complexity, even anger, on this whole thing, and that's problematic.
Well, there's a lot to keep our eye on in the upcoming weeks, but until then, Ted McKinney, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
We'll be right back with this week's panel discussion. But first, our Andrew Hunneke takes a look at foreign holdings of U.S. land in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
More of America's farm, ranch, and forest land is now owned by foreign buyers. But you might be surprised by which foreign country owns the most. This chart shows the growth in the total amount of forest land, cropland, and pasture land in the U.S. owned by foreign investors from 2012 to 2022. According to USDA's most recent data on foreign land purchases, overseas investors owned or leased about 43.5 million acres of land in 2022. That's just under 3.5% of the country's farm, ranch, and foreign land. Roughly 45% of growth in 2022 occurred in three states: Colorado, Alabama, and Michigan. Data also shows 32% of all foreign-owned land reported by the USDA is owned by Canada. The Netherlands, Italy, the UK, and Germany round out the top five. You may be wondering how much is owned by China. Chinese investors account for less than 1% of the foreign-owned land holdings. According to the report, no land was held directly by the Chinese government. Noah Wicks has a story breaking down the numbers on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
At our family farm, we grow rice, corn, and soybeans. And digital tools are as important to us as tractors and combines. In the 30 years I've been farming, technology has transformed agriculture. But some in Washington want to stifle these technologies and empower our foreign adversaries to leap ahead of us in the tech race. Protecting our competitive edge will strengthen our economic, national, and food security. Our leaders need to support American agriculture by strengthening our technology.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we're excited to get into our panel discussion today. Joined this week with Mary Kay Thatcher with Syngenta and Ann McMillan with Invariant. And Mary Kate, my first question's to you. As an Iowa native, you know, the Republican GOP caucuses kicked off earlier this week. And it was no surprise that Trump was, you know, had the landslide victory. But what were you hearing from about how candidates were addressing ag issues out in the state this election cycle?
So I think there were a lot of similarities in what the candidates were saying. One of the bigger ones, I think, is the trade issue. And I think a good concern from farmers about Mr. Trump saying, I'm going to put a 10% tariff on everything coming into this country. I think we know if that happens, there will be retaliation. And then, you know, the other thing is that whether it's the Republicans in the Iowa caucuses or it's the Democrats, you know, one of the biggest kind of not a new concern, but something that seems to me that has been a little bit not talked about lately is the whole issue of free trade agreements. And, you know, we didn't really do very well in free trade agreements with Mr. Trump the first time around. We haven't done very well with Mr. Biden. Certainly, they both have focused on sanitary and phytosanitary issues, and those are important. But I think there are more people now in the rural areas saying we got to really think about how do we up our number of free trade agreements, because certainly we see our competitors walking away from that.
And Anne, bringing you into the conversation here, AgriPulse recently released a new farmer poll looking at the approval ratings of Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack and EPA Administrator Michael Regan. And according to the poll results, rural America had a 26% approval rating for the two and a 43% disapproval rating. Now, given that we had a record net farm income this year, why don't you think farmers had a higher approval rating for the two?
Gosh, hard to sort of tell, but I will say I think it's hard to lump the two of them in together. I think it's easier to explain potentially a lower approval rating for Administrator Regan. He's the head of the EPA. I think farmers have an inherent distrust of the EPA or a skepticism of the EPA and what they and their regulatory, you know, potential overreach in some cases. I don't know why Tom Vilsack, and perhaps I'm too biased to answer this question because I think he's great as having worked for him for quite some time. But, you know, I think they're trying to do a lot at USDA to, and, you know, sometimes it's really challenging to penetrate the narrative as a Democratic administration in farm country. So, you know, I know they're going to keep working really hard on that. And they're doing, you know, the Biden administration is doing a rural tour. They started that last year and they're going to continue on, you know, getting out there in the field and listening to farmers on the ground, and hopefully we'll start changing some hearts and minds out there.
And kind of taking our conversation into the farm bill a little bit. So Democrats have so far refused to go along with Republican proposals on finding new funding for the farm bill, including taking, you know, money from conservation or nutrition assistance. From your perspective, are there any funding ideas that Democrats would support?
Gosh, I think they have a lot of funding support or funding proposal that they would support. I still think we're at the point in this farm bill where the two sides are really not speaking the same language. You know, but this week was pretty interesting. We had a pretty decisive Dear Colleague that Chairman Stabenow put out. We have Chairman Thompson talking again about really pushing a March deadline. So we're going to have to start really getting down to brass tacks on what people can agree to and what they can't. I just think up until this point, there hasn't been a catalyst event to make sure to get people to the negotiating table and make the tough decisions.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Our panel discussion continues with Invariance and McMillan giving us an update on the next steps for the 2024 appropriations process.
I might be in the minority here, but gosh, I don't know if that's it. It seems pretty tough to pass the 24 bills at this point. But I think, you know, I know that the House and the Senate are going to continue to make, you know, the effort towards doing that, but we're running out of time, and I wonder if we're just going to be looking at shifting over into 25 at some point.
And Mary Kay, would you like to add anything on that?
We're 4 months into this appropriations year. When do we give up on 24 and just start on 25? I mean, these things are so wrapped up with the abortion pill in the ag appropriations amendment, not something you would normally think about. And now Israel and Ukraine and the Mexican border. And I mean, these are massive issues. I just don't see, I mean, certainly we're kicking the can down the road to March 1st and March 8th, but I don't see any indication yet that we're gonna have an answer to the appropriations bills then. So, you know, then what do we do? Do we do another short term? Do we finally just give up? I think it's a very difficult challenge, and one that unfortunately, if you made me bet on it today, I wouldn't bet Congress could do it.
And Mary Kay, it won't be long until the fiscal year 25 appropriations bills are going to be due. What will it take to get Congress to come together and to agree on spending levels?
People are going to have to compromise. And that's going to be especially hard in an election year because you're going to give up really steadfast ideas as you move forward. Again, think about ag approps and thinking about the abortion pill. That is a very polarizing issue. I think you're going to have to drop out those really difficult issues that don't relate to the specific approach bill that you're dealing with. And I can't see members of Congress doing that, especially in an election year. Again, that's why I just don't know that I can see any more hope in a March 1st and March 8th deadline than I see in one this week.
So given the internal division that's taking place right now with the House GOP, how do you think that internal conflict will affect the House's ability to get a farm bill done or anything else done legislatively?
I think that you look at the fact that now the appropriations bills are pushed off until the second one being Friday, March 8th. Well, you've heard Chairman Thompson say for quite a while now, hey, I need 3 weeks in a row that the House is in session to move this through the House floor. Well, now they've just lost the first week in March, so they don't have 3 weeks. I think there's another 3 week option in May. And then after that, there's no more 3 weeks until after the election.
And Anne, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it is really challenging. I think there's still potential, if all the suns and the moons and the stars aligned, that, potentially you could work around the appropriations, the new dates of March 1st and March 8th. But this is just a really challenging environment because of the funding issues. And until there can be a real difficult decision and conversation and compromise on where the money's coming from and where it's not coming from and where it's going and where it's not going. It's really hard to see demonstrable forward movement here.
Alrighty. Well, thank you both for joining us today. There's a lot to, keep an eye on, but thank you again. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke introduces us to the latest farmhand on Capitol Hill.
Leslie Weber McNitt works for the Eleanor Crook Foundation as the Senior Director of U.S. Advocacy and Communications. Over the course of her career, McNitt has worked in various leadership roles, including on the House Ag Committee, at USDA during the Obama administration, and on staff at the National Corn Growers Association. She says some of the best advice she can tell young adults as they begin their careers in D.C. is to find guidance from trusted advisors.
And I would also tell young Leslie to seek out mentors. Mentors every step of the way in my career and in my life have been invaluable. Seek out mentors of all different ages, including your peers. You have a lot to learn, and then pay it forward. You have a lot to offer other people, and it's important that, we help other young rising stars who are committed to making a positive change in the world. We help them figure out their path forward just like, our mentors have done for us.
McNitt first came to town with the hope of one day being the youngest Secretary of State. But throughout her career, she became more involved in the global food space, later expanding her portfolio to also include trade issues. You can watch her full Meet the Farmhand interview on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. USDA will release multiple monthly reports, including livestock slaughter and milk production, as well as a couple yearly reports on coffee and pecan production. Our Spencer Chase and Sarah Wyant will be in Salt Lake City for the American Farm Bureau Federation's convention. We'll continue to follow the latest in farm policy news at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel. Take care of yourself.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.